Well, I got good news and I got bad news. The good news is we have one service today. And because of that, I'm going to tell you all the reasons that I like this group of people better than the 1045 people. Because they'll never hear it because they're somewhere else. So this is perfect. Okay, I'm kidding. But this is kind of like when you buy a DVD and there's bonus material. And you're like, well, I didn't see that in the theater, but there's these extras. This is like the bonus material. Because no one else gets this but you guys. So this is good. And the bad news is this. I hope you were paying attention to the gospel. I read that at the beginning of the week, and I thought, you've got to be kidding me. This is what I draw in the lectionary. This is not good news. I don't want to come up and be the guy that has to tell you that Jesus said you got to hate people. I'm not a fan of that. I mean, that gospel means good news, and what I heard in what Dave read to me was more like bad news. I mean, hate is such a strong word, and we don't blink an eye when we're upset at someone and say, oh, I really hate them. I really hate what they're doing. But not when it's directed at families. I mean, unless you come from an abusive home, of course, or even ourselves. Like it's okay if we feel that way, but it's not okay if Jesus says that we have to hate people. And that makes my job hard. I mean, I don't like these kind of, I much prefer that, love your neighbor as yourself. And I thought to myself when I first looked at this was this. This is literally what came to mind. How am I going to soften this? How am I going to make this easier? Because I was uncomfortable enough for like, I don't even like that. And I even felt guilty for thinking such a thing. Like, is there an out that I can take? I mean, I could have said, I'm just going to preach on the Deuteronomy passage. Because the centerpiece of that Deuteronomy passage that is even a tagline today for our Jewish brothers and sisters, choose life. That is actually a tagline that they still embrace. Choose life. And they're referencing that whole thing that we read in Deuteronomy 30. But the summation of that is just choose life, which means choose God. I mean, I feel like, the kind of TV shows where, the crime TV shows, where a perpetrator is arrested, a suspect is arrested, and the first policeman comes in and just runs roughshod over the guy. And then he leaves. And then the second policeman comes in and is his buddy. Good cop, bad cop. Well, that's what I feel like today. Like Jesus was the bad cop. Now I'm going to come in and smooth things over and make things okay. It's a routine that we all know well, but it's not even that. I decided instead of trying to make excuses for Jesus, so you wouldn't also not like me at the end of the sermon, I decided I better just do the hard work and dig in a little bit. And that's literally what I did. Because everything, and I was looking at this, everything hinges on that one word, right? I mean, to me, when I looked at this, everything hinges on the word hate. Like, what is behind that? That is the crux of the matter to me, or at least that is the most disturbing part of everything that is said here. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to have to do the thing that I'm not very good at because I'm not really good at Greek. But, we had to learn it in seminary. And these are the very reasons you have to learn Greek in seminaries. I went back and I dug around. And this is what I discovered about the Greek. The word hate is missio. Not that that really matters. But it doesn't mean what you think it means. And I always look at that and I go, then why did the translators pick this word? And we can do that. I mean, translators get together and they have groups of people when they translate the Bible. And there's like not just one person who makes it. It's like a group of people and they debate what words they should use. Because sometimes ancient languages and certain words have multiple meanings. This is one of those places. And so I looked at it. And it is used only for comparative purposes only. In other words, if I was to ask you, when we talk about apples and oranges, which do you like better? Do you like oranges better or do you like apples better? I'm just curious. Who likes oranges better than apples? I'm just curious. Okay, let me see the apple folks now. Okay, so we're apple people here. Okay, that's good. It makes sense. We're in Cupertino, right? You know, just thinking out loud on that one. But that's how they made comparisons back in the day. They used the word missio to make a comparison. A different way of saying it would be, which of these things do you love less? So Jesus is teaching something extremely difficult, but not mean. There's a big difference. Jesus is saying in this, he's like, you have to love everyone else less than me if you're going to be my disciple. So we make all sorts of comparisons, but we just don't use the words love less. We use words like, what do you love more? You know, do you like chicken more than seafood? You know, even earlier this morning, you know, Pastor Ben likes which service better than the other service? Are we recording this? Oh, man, I'm in trouble. Oh. Now, here's the thing, though. Jesus is putting forth a choice in the same way that God puts forth a choice to the people of Israel in that Deuteronomy 30. It's like you have this land in front of you and you have a choice of how you're going to be in the land. You can choose me and things will go well and long for you, or you can do your own thing. And Jesus, and God's just saying, and it's not going to go as well, but that's your choice. Jesus narrows this down and he says, you all have a choice as well. Now, here's the thing. If you want to be a disciple, there's a choice to be made, because that's what he's saying. If you want to be my disciple, there's a decision. But if you want to be a part of the crowd, no big deal. If you want to be a fan on the sidelines and just cheering Jesus on, but not really following him, but you like, you admire him, you like him, but yeah, I don't put any of that stuff into practice in my daily life. Well, then there's no choice to be made. This is the place where you go, I want to step up my commitment. And Jesus says, if you want to step up your commitment, it's going to take something a little more. Just like anything else in the world, when we want to step up our commitment to something, it takes extra effort. So nothing new there. And so here's the thing. When you make a choice to make a commitment or devote energy to something, guess what? Something else has to kind of fall underneath that. And I when I was thinking about this, earlier in the gospel, actually later in the gospel, Jesus says in Luke, and it's in other places, no servant can serve two masters. Either he'll hate one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. So it's not just a truism, and Jesus says you got to love these things less if you're going to be my disciple. It's true in anything. You can't have multiple number one priorities. In other words, if everything's a priority, then nothing's a priority. To be fully committed to something means you have to embrace it. For example, if you're going to be a trapeze artist, you have to firmly grip the trapeze. And so there's the guy who invented it, as a matter of fact. That's the guy who invented the trapeze. But if you want to move to the other trapeze, if they're swinging above up in a circus tent and you want to move from one to the other, what do you have to do? You have to let go of one to embrace the other. Well, Jesus is saying to us, if you want to follow me in a discipleship kind of way, in a deeper level, you're going to have to let go of one thing to embrace me. Now, there comes a point, as you all know, if you've ever been to the circus or seen it on TV, where you have to commit and let go of one before you can grasp the other. And at that point, you're fully committed, no matter what. Even if you're not holding on, you are fully committed, because they are not close enough together that you can have, like, hold on to both at the same time. And that's why it's a circus act. There's some excitement involved. And there is some trust involved in your own ability, and also the fact that those things are swinging the way they should. Now, this guy who invented it, his name is Jules Lyotard. Get that. He was an attorney and an acrobat. Go figure, right? And he decided that he loved the circus more than the courtroom, although I think you could argue they're probably about the same thing at times, right? So either way, he was a daredevil, and he decided that he was going to come up with a circus act, and he invented the trapeze, and two for one this morning, he was also the guy who invented the one-piece stretchy outfit called the leotard, which is his last name. So that I throw that in, no extra cost. Okay, so he coined the phrase trapeze, and this is where it gets interesting. And the root word of trapeze is, if a trapeze with the two wires hanging down from the ceiling and the bar comes from the shape on the inside, which is essentially a rectangle. I mean, if you can imagine the trapeze wire and the bar attached to the roof, that's a rectangle shape. And that's what the root word is. Matter of fact, if we trace it back to Greek, the word down there, it's trapeza, which is translated table, probably because it was the same shape as a rectangle. Where am I going with this? Think about the one table that is associated in the New Testament with us, the communion table. It is around the Last Supper communion table where Jesus tells his disciples that he cannot continue to hang on to this life, but that he must let go of this life so that they may receive eternal life. And what does he do after that but climbs up on the cross and lets his life go for that very reason? And I never really thought about it, but I guess that's what Jesus essentially asks us to do in the Christian life, that we have to let go of loyalties and other things to reach for him. And he does that throughout Scripture where he asks folks to let go of things so that they may follow him. Abraham's a great example, right? Let go of your homeland and your family relations and move to a place that I will tell you about down the road. Trust me. Or people like Peter and Andrew and James and John, leave the nets behind. The only thing that you know, leave the lake behind and follow me. Did they know what they were getting into when they did that? Not fully. But they did it. And so this morning, it is God who asks us if we are interested in discipleship, that all other loyalties take a second place. He doesn't say, and you have to hate and despise them. You just have to love them less. And just like a swinging trapeze, there comes a point in time when you have to let go of the one to grasp the other. And in that split second when you do that, you're in the air and you're wondering, did I do the right thing? But Jesus is always there to grab onto us. And even when we fail, guess what? Jesus is the net that catches us instead of falling to our deaths in a moment of doubt. We fall into his grace and mercy. What a beautiful thought, right? In other words, there's no way we can lose by following Jesus because, like the theme of our Labor Day retreat, grace wins every time. Wow. One of Jesus' followers said it this way in terms of making a decision. Salvation is free, but discipleship will cost you your life. But even Jesus says, look, you know, if you're thinking about this, if you're just considering it, what does he go on to say? You know, suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Wouldn't you sit down first and estimate the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? For if he lays the foundation and not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule him, saying, this fellow has begun to build and was not able to finish it. So Jesus tells us, hey, you got to count the cost. He doesn't say, well, you got to hate everyone else and you got to follow me. It's decision time. Act now. Don't delay. You have 5 minutes to sign on the dotted line. I'm not going to offer this again. And you better do it now. And I don't want you to think about it. Just put your name down right here. He says, before you jump, make sure you know what you're getting into. You know, he's not trying to force anyone into anything. Think about it first, because it will cost you something. I like that. Jesus is not coercing you into a decision. He's saying, I want you to think long and hard about it. I want you to be sure this is what you want. And for those that say, I want to be more than a spectator in watching Jesus, that I really want to follow him, the cost will either be minimal or everything, depending upon your heart, right? If you jump in and become a disciple, but you're still holding on to other stuff, it will be costly. But if you've already let go of those things, you have everything to gain. Now, when I think about counting the cost, I don't know if I've told you about this before. I might have. But I have this image of this building when I think about counting the cost. It's on I-80. But it's not I-80 here. It's on I-80 about 2,040 miles east of here. It's in a town called LaSalle, Illinois. It's right next to another town called Peru, Illinois. And I've driven by this church on the interstate hundreds of times. It's called the Midwest Center for Christian Living. And I, like I said, I've driven by it hundreds and hundreds of times. And all I could find was the map image of this overhead. Now, you can see that's I-80 running left to right, right to left. That's 351, but there's the church building. And you can't really get a good sight, but you notice that the octagonal shape is not complete. And every time you drive by it, there's no walls either. There's only metal I-beams. And so every time you drive by it, all you see is the shell of this church building. Now, the rectangle part of the church building is completed, and I did some digging around, and I found out that they started this addition in 1996 to build this larger sanctuary. And it's still in the shell shape as it was in 1996. And I can't help but wonder. I don't know the story. And I'm not judging them at all, but you think about counting the cost. They were faithful. They were ambitious. They love Jesus. I have no doubt that they love Jesus. But I'm wondering if they ever truly counted the cost before they got going. It's about thinking through things before jumping in. Look before you leap. I mean, we do that with all sorts of things in life, right? I don't know if you guys remember this, but where I lived, back before smartphones and internet and all that stuff. Do you guys remember time and temperature? You used to be able to call on the phone, a certain phone number, and get time and temperature. Some of you remember that. I don't know if that was everywhere, but time and temperature. Like, you want to know what time it is? You don't have a watch on? You call. You call and get the time and the temperature. And if it was really fascinating, I mean, really, like, extensive, you could actually get the day's forecast. You're prepared for the day. You know, you want to know what you're going to wear. You now need to know what you're going to do. Or if you're going to cook something at home, what do? You make sure you've got all the ingredients first. Or even, I even learned this, is that before there was even a way, if you didn't have a thermometer, did you know that you could tell the temperature by counting cricket chirps? I put Jiminy Cricket up there because some of you might be creeped out by a picture of a real cricket, so I saved you. That is not what a real cricket looks like, just FYI, full disclosure. Yeah, I learned this, that if you took a 14-second increment and you could hear a cricket chirping, count the chirps in 14 seconds and add 40, and you have the temperature. I mean, provided you have crickets. I mean, that's an important component of this. So even way back when, people figured out a way to tell the temperature so that they could be prepared for the day and how they're going to do things. And I'm thinking to myself, if we do this unconsciously, all these different things where we think ahead and prepare for the day, if we do that in all the small stuff in our lives, why wouldn't we do that with the most important offer that has been put on the table since the beginning of time? Jesus says, if you want to be my disciple, you got to make everything else second place to me. He asks for a complete commitment. And he doesn't ask for blind faith. He actually asks for us to use our heads and our hearts when making a decision when it comes to spiritual commitment. So even in a tough teaching, Jesus gives us time to mull it over, to chew on it. That's my line, to chew on it, to think about it. And doesn't force anyone into anything they're not ready to do. And even in that, there is grace. And it is true. Salvation is free, but discipleship will cost us everything. Amen.